This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.
For co-host Bea Bonner, I'm Randy Atkins. Visit nprillinois.org and click on Community Voices to read about or listen on demand to past episodes. Today, we visit the UIS ECHE series panel, The Status of Black Lives Matter, A Shift in Policy, Culture, Justice, and Reform. The panel of leaders includes Tess Dooley, Ty Dooley, Justin Rose, and Tiffany Saunders. Tess Dooley moderates the discussion.
I would like to kick this event off by providing background on Black Lives Matter movement and why this topic is appropriate for the ECHE speaker series. The Black Lives Matter movement began back in 2013. It began as a social media hashtag for all the platforms. It was just a hashtag. It was in the wake of Trayvon Martin, who's an African-American teenager. He was shot while walking to a family friend's house. The person who shot him, George Zimmerman, was subsequently acquitted. The movement continued to grow in the wake of the deaths of Eric Garner and Michael Brown at the hands of police officers. From the beginning, Black Lives Matter has contended that American law enforcement institutions are systematically corrupt, being especially predisposed toward violence against Black individuals. But they do not contend that every police officer is personally prejudiced, but that on whole, law enforcement institutions stack the decks against Black communities and especially against Black men. According to Black Lives Matter, the movement is an ideological and political intervention in a world where Black lives are systematically and intentionally targeted for demise. It is an affirmation of Black folks' humanity, our contributions to this society, and our resilience in the face of deadly oppression. In 2018, 5 years after Black Lives Matter began, co-founder Alicia Garza said in an interview that Black Lives Matter's goal is to build the kind of society where Black people can live with dignity and respect. They are working toward eradicating systemic racism that permeates much of our society here in America. The Black Lives Matter movement found a much wider audience, new resurgence last year, and that really leads us into beginning our discussion here today. Dr. Saunders, could you discuss the issues in 2020 that gave rise to this resurgence and reemergence of Black Lives Matter? Did the cultural phenomena in 2020 in some way contribute to the civil unrest that we witnessed in 2020?
2020 was a special year because of the pandemic and things associated with that. Just as we were getting to those shutdowns associated with the pandemic, that we learned about the death of Breonna Taylor while she was sleeping in her home. We learn about this. There's certainly public outcry about this happening. But again, we almost immediately move into a shutdown mode. That tempered some of what future protesters and future individuals who were upset would have been able to do at that moment. It is then, right as we're starting to come out of some of those COVID lockdowns, that we learn about George Floyd, or we watch the video of George Floyd, and that's in May. What ends up happening then is just public outcry. So we're in the midst of what should be an event pandemic that should bring communities together, ultimately lead to community support of one another. And instead, we're still seeing a Black person die at the hands of a police officer. What made both of these situations especially problematic is Breonna Taylor is in her house, which is supposed to be a space of comfort and sanctuary. And George Floyd is calling out for his mother, right? So that's one of the things he's saying, I can't breathe, and he's calling out for his mother. For people across race lines, that incensed people. That led people back to the streets again to say, look, yet again, at the hands of the state, we are seeing that Black lives do not in fact matter. And it's very interesting to think about policing as well. Policing as an institution, especially as it exists today, Some have traced back to sort of the history of enslavement, some of the patrols that were sent out to look for instance, runaway slaves. So there's that sort of lineage as well, and some of that history. If you trace sort of that history and that purpose, perhaps you are not surprised at what state-sanctioned violence looks like today, but you can still be completely upset. And I think that that's a legitimate emotion. I think the other thing that was always brewing between these protests is greater interrogation of whiteness as well, and especially white womanhood. Between the two big protest movements, we have what becomes known as Karen culture. And this is the white woman who calls the police on Black individuals for doing everyday activities. You're having a cookout, you're trying to sell lemonade. These are people who are weaponizing their both womanhood, but also whiteness, because they know that it will get the police to come out and potentially be used to control the behavior of whoever it is that they're calling the police on. We have that on one end, and then we have on the opposite end, white women using their privilege to protect Black protesters. We get the wall of moms at some of these protests as well. I think this is an interesting counterbalance or interesting use of white womanhood, perhaps on two opposite ends of the spectrum, that is very interesting to think about, to interrogate, to understand, maybe come to understand the characteristics of both the women who show up to protect protesters and the women who weaponize their whiteness to call the police. There's some interesting analyses that can be done in that area.
Thank you, Tiffany. To follow up your point, you were talking about seeing white women, some of the responses that we've seen to the civil unrest in 2020 and that's truly going on into 2021. I want to pose a question over to Mr. Rose. As a pushback against Black Lives Matter in 2020, we also saw the phrase "All Lives Matter" go public. Could you discuss why All Lives Matter kind of misses the point and is maybe part of the problem?
Thank you for the question, Dr. Dooley. I think before even answering the question, All Lives Matter and how it misses the point and makes things more contentious and political, if you will, I think it's important to rehash the emphasis of what Black Lives Matter is and why it's important that we continue to say it and what we think when we do. As we know, it is a response to a response and to shed light on the racially motivated killings that we continue to see at the hands of law enforcement or by some type of vigilante who deputizes themselves as, I can handle this situation, I can handle this matter. And I think in that, you get a movement of racial justice. You get people who are tired of being seeing Black and brown bodies being overlooked. Equally as important, you start to see a community of people who are really just fighting for human life and human rights. You start to see marches, you start to see protests, you start to see these difficult dialogues and confrontations, or even policy changes to confront some of the systematic or institutional racism that we see when we see Black bodies continue to be overlooked. The founders, Patrice Cullors and Alicia Garza and Opal Temeti, they leave it to us in many ways. They're not concerned with who is and who isn't a part of the movement. It would be great if certain people latch on and follow through, but I think they leave it to rational individuals to say, I'm tired of seeing the injustice. I'm tired of seeing the disenfranchisement. I'm tired of seeing Black bodies being slain. And I think they leave it to us to say, what kind of world do we want to shape? How much energy we want to dedicate to this cause? That's a great approach, if you ask me. How much is too much? And I also think about the All Lives Matter commentary in relation to Black Lives Matter around the famous metaphor. I think it blew up over social media when they talked about houses on a block being on fire. It was pretty much, you're on a block, you see a house on fire with people in it. A neighbor just says, well, what about my house? And you simply ask, is your house on fire? And they say, no. Well, in that, exactly. No, your house isn't on fire, so that's not the house we're going to put attention on right now. We're going to go to this house with people in it that's on fire and put our attention there. When I think about the Black Lives Matter movement, it's not saying that all lives don't matter. It's just these are the lives that's being overlooked and slain in the streets. That's my response to it, and I think it misses the point when people don't see the value of human life and human rights, which is what the whole movement is about.
Discuss your role at UIS and how it contributes to a culture that makes Black students at UIS feel like their lives not only matter, but are appreciated and celebrated.
When I think about my role as an administrator on the campus, who's responsible for creating spaces and representing for all the needs and concerns of students? I want to put that out there. But I think making my African-American and Black students feel special, appreciated, and validated, it rises to the top for me. If you look at me, I know some, see, I'm a Black man. I can't change that. That won't change. It's a special crevice in my heart for Black-identifying students. I get joy in coming to work every day, figuring out how do I make that a priority in the work that I do. When we look at UIS, if you look by the numbers of student enrollment, we have about 14.5% of students who would self-identify as African-American or Black. It's important to note that that's statistically higher than our other 12 publics when we think about that aggregate number of students who are enrolled, but it's substantially lower than our white identifying students. And when we also think about our non-white other counterparts at other institutions nationally, it's lower. Just the amount of students who self-identify on your college campus as Black is low. When I think about how I show up to work for my Black students or non-white students, I think about showing up or creating a space that's equitable. It's a buzzword now, everybody's using it, but we truly try to practice equity, right? Like what initiatives need to be created? What resources need to be diverted to make sure that these experiences that we want to shape and have for our students are afforded to them if they choose to engage, of course. It's important that not jumping at every task force and working group that I can get on, but any time that I'm presented with an opportunity to be in those meetings and be in those spaces where I'm helping shape policy or question is, are we really operationalizing what we say we stand for in our mission and in our values? That's an opportunity that I get excited for because I know where I'm going. I know I'm going into that meeting to represent and advocate for those voices that are on the fringe. And that same token, you get to talk about the greatness that they bring to the university. Centering those stories are equally as important and not always the story of the struggle. I know our Black students bring a lot to the campus, and we want to celebrate that, which is what I try to do. And then finally, showing up as a mentor, showing up as an advisor, those things come first to them. They don't care how much you know. They don't care what letters of alphabet soup you have behind your name. You're not showing up for them in a major way, then I think it truly cuts your legs from beneath you, right? Like, why are you an administrator if you're not using your platform the right way? How do I amplify their voices or even empathize and say, I feel you, and I'm going to sit in this ministry of presence with you and figure it out? From a service standpoint, we make sure that we celebrate Black History Month. We make sure that we celebrate awareness weeks that matter to our students, our Black students, and give them platforms to create that awareness and that knowledge that they want to share with campus. Those are just some of the ways that I try to create a sense of belongingness and care for our students that are currently here and for any future students who are listening and thinking about making UIS a home.
It just came to my mind the phrase, representation matters. I'm so thankful that UIS has put you in a position where you are an administrator and you represent the excellence of Blackness at UIS, and you are able to mentor, are visible to our students. As a university where we, unfortunately, our numbers as far as faculty are pretty low. I believe there are 5 identified African-American tenure track faculty. As you see, the majority of us are here today. I hope that we see those numbers grow as well, because it's very hard for us to be the face and be Tiffany's on almost every panel. How much time do we have, right, to do all of the service and to be the faces for our Black students and to represent Black excellence at our university?
It's important. Just I hope every student was listening in and saying, this is what it's about. It's not too heavy, right? We're trying to lift, you know, the next generation up. Take it all in, everybody.
So that's a positive note. Unfortunately, we can't talk about Black Lives Matter without turning it over to Dr. Dooley on a very somber topic, but one that has to be discussed when we talk about Black Lives Matter. Dr. Dooley, I understand you're a social equity scholar. You've studied several aspects related to inequalities based on race in the U.S. Recently, you completed a study regarding policing. Could you please discuss your research with us and then how you perceive Black Lives Matter contributing to bringing light to this societal problem?
We have to understand, and Tiffany kind of alluded to this, that when we think about policing in the United States and the origin of that, the law enforcement and police were really keepers of the social order. That's sort of the principal sort of task. This relatively innocuous statement does have profound implications in understanding relationship of African Americans vis-a-vis criminal justice system and police. At its origins, when we think about at the founding and really for the founding of this nation, how African Americans were viewed by this country. Don't have to move any further than looking at the Constitution, where we were considered only property and 3/5 of a human being. When you take that sort of context, then you can see the origins of where we were and where we are now.
Dr. Ty Dooley on policing and Black Lives Matter. Have a guest to suggest? Email us at communityvoices@mprillinois.org. We'll return to the UIS Ecce Series panel, The Status of Black Lives Matter, A Shift in Policy, Culture, Justice, and Reform.